Blog Talk Radio.
This is Jane Hoffman. We had 1 minute of technical delays, and now we're back on board. Tonight we are covering three things: the Jade Helm of Military Hindsight of Edward Snowden, the outrageous comments by Donald Trump against Hillary Clinton regarding the Second Amendment, and the purpose of the use of guns by individual citizens in the United States, and what the Christian message is behind that, which is actually not to have any guns. So I see Albert on the line, and Don will be calling in shortly. I am going to read a short segment. Edward Snowden was a computer professional that was hired directly by the CIA, but then later became a contractor. He leaked classified information from the NSA in 2013 without authorizations. His disclosures revealed numerous global surveillance programs, including Five Eyes Intelligence Alliance, which also cooperated with telecommunication companies, which hacked people's private accounts. But it also was affiliated with tracking down terrorists through cell phones and eliminating them in pinpoint ways, either by computer or by drones. So in other words, flesh and blood died for this, not just privacy violations. In 2013, Snowden was hired by the NSA contractor Booz Allen Hamilton, who was a major contractor with the U.S. government. He also worked under Dell and directly under the CIA, as I mentioned. He documented in early June his situation and his revelations to Glenn Greenwald, Laura Poitras, and Ewan McCaskill. It became international attention, and it realized that although a lot of people are unaware of the FISA courts, the Federal Intelligence Security Administration that regulates court rulings outside of the general spectre of United States court systems. In other words, it's a special permission court in which different agencies get special permissions under federal courts to conduct certain surveillances without public knowledge for the purpose of concealing that information so that the general public will not find out. So that was part of the movie, too, and I will briefly discuss that. In my opinion, if I were Edward Snowden, and this is, I'm not talking from a script or anything, that was all my own saying, I would not have blown the whistle just for the fact of public privacy breach violations with different United States cell phone companies, because that in itself would not be risking one's entire life for. The fact that we had other situations in which people were killed and situations like that occurred, and we were targeting individuals without thoroughly checking a pruning of an information system that downsized, let's say there were 500 suspected terrorists, they were still pruning the system to maybe target that down to 50. In other words, our information was not complete. And there's a lot more people who know a lot more about it than I do. But with that, I'm going to play one 30-second clip, and then Don and Albert will come in.
Top secret NSA documents. The journalists were traveling across the world, from New York to a hotel in Hong Kong, for a secret meeting whose outcome they couldn't predict.
105 North Avenue 52.
Because I knew that what was waiting there was vitally important, but because we didn't know what really was going on, we thought there was even a chance. I mean, every step of the way kind of had all sorts of hazards. The question mark that hung over us more than anything else was the fact that we had no idea who the person was that we were about to meet. So we were really just kind of rushing into this huge unknown.
The documents Snowden had with him were so sensitive, he could be imprisoned for decades for removing them. For all he knew, The U.S. authorities could have intercepted the communications of the journalists, and he was about to fall into a trap.
I crossed the Rubicon at that point. Actually, you know, I don't think anybody can reach such a clear turning point in their life without thinking Alia Yakta est to them, to themselves. You know, the die is cast. I had to expect that the most likely scenario was that I would be led out in handcuffs.
How would we know that we weren't talking to some agent or somebody else? So the quite ingenious method that he invented was to hold this Rubik's Cube, and that was the first thing I looked for.
We, unfortunately, we only have a 45-minute show tonight, so we'll have to go on our own wits to complete it. With that, I'll introduce Albert first. Good evening, Albert.
Hey, good evening.
And hello, Don, live from the Tri-State NAACP Convention.
Yes. Hi there, folks. How you doing?
I'm pretty prime tonight, and we did have a number of things to discuss. We can go in any direction. An hour before the show or 2 hours before the show, there was an explosion in New York. 25 people got mildly injured, but they do not think it's terroristic related.
Okay, well, I don't know much about it. Albert, do you know about this?
No, not really. Maybe it's too soon to make any analysis on it.
It happened at 8:30 New York time, and now it's 12:30 New York time, 4 hours ago. Only one person got moderately wounded. Everybody else got slightly wounded, not enough to even make a dent. But there was supposed to be some kind of road race coming through there the next day, and they think that's what that person's purpose was. And there were two separate parts of New York City that happened. With that, though, I did see the Snowden movie in the big theater, and Oliver Stone framed the movie in such a way that he did not look like a treasonous traitor. He just looked like someone who was speaking his conscience and following what he thought was doing right. So it's up to you guys what you want to discuss, but... Yes.
Talking about that explosive, you know, in New York, you know, a lot of police, like your everyday regular police officer, you know, down to the bottom, like even they have explosives. You know, the police officers got their hands on explosives. Too many of the police officers can easily get their hand on explosives. You know, you've seen that one part where they actually killed one guy with the robot, and they had an explosive on them, you know? And so, you know, we know the police are, you know, the United States are being pretty militarized. But, you know, with all these explosives going on, you know, you wonder where they're coming from. And you know, I mean, and not every policeman is perfect or, you know, good, you know what I mean? So, you know, where are these explosives come from? I don't know. Maybe they come from the Justice Department.
Well, this was a small, it was an average explosive in a garbage dumpster near a Chelsea neighborhood by 22nd West, which is a wealthier neighborhood. I would say it's middle to upper class in Manhattan. And I don't think it has much to do with the character of a police officer. But
no, of course not, babe. I'm saying that the more access you give to the people, the more, let's just say if there's only one AK-47, you know what I mean? There's not likely somebody else is going to have it, right? But if you make the AK-47 accessible to all the security guards in California, right? It's going to be more likely that somebody else can get their hands on it, right? So if you make explosives more accessible to almost every police officer, then it's more likely that somebody else, like a bad person, can get their hands on it. You know, see what I'm saying?
I do to some extent, but because the nature of these types of situations are so unpredictable, For example, someone put an explosive in a dumpster. It could have been anybody with a regimented ninth grade education. It could have been anyone with any kind of certain vengeance. Aggravated, like that movie you made me watch online about the guy who had been unemployed for 18 months in England and was targeting a grocery store chain by putting packages in one postal box in a certain neighborhood in England. So I do think different police departments across the country have more specialized training, and I'm pretty sure that New York is at top of the line. But right now, as Hillary Clinton stated tonight, nobody knows for sure what this is, and even 24 hours we might not know, so there's no point in trying to guess. By the way, Don, could you just give me a quick lowdown of what your agenda was today at the NAACP?
Yeah, we had our tri-state, which is a same as a state convention, more or less, except we don't have enough branches in Nevada, over Idaho or Utah, so we combine them, all the branches in those areas: Boise, Pocatello, Logan, Ogden, Salt Lake, Utah, and Reno and Los Angeles, Las Vegas, and Nevada. So we've got the tri-state that we are. This was our workshop day where we had judges and all the police, a couple of the police chiefs, all the police and DAs. We heard from them, education administrators, Tracy Davis, who is our superintendent. We had the state Department of Education representative. And we also had people talking about equal employment opportunities there are a couple other workshops that we had. So we've been in workshops all day long, listening to the administrators and academics talking about a certain of the most vital issues that we're facing right now. And one of the things that stuck out to me, we had one judge who was, when Ferguson happened, the statistics came out about how the city is run off of black traffic offenders. They are, you know, the fines, they are arrested anywhere from 20 to 50 to one guy was arrested or stopped with traffic tickets 52 times. And so this is driving while black, which is, of course, a felony. And then we were, he expressed surprise at how cities stay afloat with this manner, where you've got these poor traffic offenders, and they can't pay their fines, so they go to jail, and their fines compound, and the next thing you know, they've got multiple fines on warrant lists and spend more time in jail, plus have the fines to pay afterwards. So it's a circle that never ends. And he expressed surprise at that. And that's just a normal way of cities staying in business. So
okay,
we're talking
about...
Okay,
we got the general gist of that, but since we only have 45 minutes total for the show, I understand what you're talking about, something similar that happened in Ferguson, but I also want to point out that Tyree King near Columbus, Ohio, got killed. And
right.
It was another shooting where they mistook a BB gun for a real gun. And
right, and then he was a kid.
And did you hear about that, Albert? He was a 13-year-old boy.
What happened?
A 13-year-old boy in Columbus, Ohio, got killed in a suspected armed robbery in which they mistook the BB gun for a real gun.
And killed him.
Right.
And,
multiple times. There was a white cop who had was a 9-year veteran.
Right. So, Albert...
Of course, police are easily to pull the trigger because, you know, they know they can get away with it many times. You know, most of the time, police get away with it. And so, you know, let's just say if you're a policeman, right? And, you know, you see something happening. You don't even know if he has a BB gun or a real gun. You know what's going on. But, you know if you accidentally kill somebody, you know, you're more likely to get away with it. So what are you going to do? You know what I mean? You're going to do what you know that you can get away with it. You know what I mean? It's just so easy to pull the trigger when you know you can get away with it. And so it keeps on happening over again.
Yeah, I guess this kid who was an honor student really wasn't even part of that any type of street scene. It was just a fluke. I'm not even sure why he was carrying a BB gun. But the fact of the matter is I'm wondering, we could piece all this together into one thought, whether it's another black child dying in an urban setting or a potential terrorist strike. How is this going to affect the upcoming election? And also, I read within the Obama situation that an op-ed piece in a well-respected magazine that Obama would not have pardoned Edward Snowden even with the release of the Oliver Stone movie. So we have things at stake like privacy issues, personal rights asserted on the street, and also a dumb candidate like Trump every day infringing even on the rights of his opponent, and I don't see any powerful direction or leadership at this point. Being that we only have about 30 minutes left, could somebody comment?
What, about lack of leadership?
Well, I'm just saying I did want to stay on the Snowden issue a couple more minutes, but I don't think you know that much about it, Don. I know that Albert knows a little bit about it because he's talked to me about it before.
Right. Well, the only thing it's not my biggest concern, only because it should be normal. When we see bad things happen, it's normal for an American citizen to, I don't want to say whistleblow, but that's what it was. But that should be part of their democratic responsibility, their citizen responsibility. They're telling kids to tell on their parents for drugs or whatever. They're telling the other motorists to call on people they think might be driving while intoxicated. They tell people to tell on, you know, their teachers or their clergymen if they have sexual abuse with their parishioners and kids. You know, they tell people to tell on other people all the time, a Gestapo.
Well, I do have some good news, Don, that Philando Castile situation in Minneapolis, it has gone forward into an independent council of examination and a possible court charge. So in Columbus, the mother of Tyree did ask for an independent counsel on her child who was just shot a day or two ago, Tyree King, and that remains to be seen. But in some cities, the rubber is meeting the road.
Well, that's true. You know, Sandra Bland, her family received $1.5 million. Right, $2 million. So it was 1.7 or 1.8, something. But, yeah, that's wrongdoing. That is illegal criminal activity on the white police officers and Hispanic police officers and any other police officers. So we're talking about the fact that these guys are guilty of of murder. And they should all be under the scrutiny of a grand jury. There should be no case of police shootings, especially of civilians, especially unarmed, that are not brought up to the grand jury. That's ridiculous. It's, again, undemocratic. And we're talking about white criminals, and they're all over. All over the place.
I have a question for you, and then I'll let Albert go. The mayor of Columbus, Andrew Gintner, said that a 13-year-old is dead in the city of Columbus because of our obsession with guns and violence, and his, and by the way, this is off the record, his BB gun was almost a perfect replica of the pistols that cops carry in that town. So my, pretend that John was on the show for 1 minute. This is what John would say. Why is a 13-year-old carrying a gun on the streets? And just by that child's actions, did that child deserve to be shot?
Because it's a black child who has a gun, and that is almost as bad as driving while black. So in the white cop's eyes, that child had to be eliminated no matter what. Same with Tamara Rice. Tamara Rice in Cleveland. You know,
yes.
you got a 12 year old boy with a fake gun. Who, what police officer is going to take 1.8 seconds to kill a kid like that? That is not a police officer. It's not a human being. It's a, not even an animal. It's just an unhuman alien who, he deserved to die. He should have been, you know, he should be incarcerated and with the death penalty.
By the way, Tyree King's friend, Demetrius Braxton, age 19, said that the police told them both to stop and kneel, and they did, but King got up and ran, and when he ran, the cop shot him 4 to 5 times.
Okay,
so,
well, that's a good way to stop.
Right. Albert, do you have any thoughts on your mind tonight related to what we're talking about tonight?
Well, I mean, obviously, you literally said, I mean, right there, they shot him a bunch of times while he was running away. I mean, right there, I mean, you shoot somebody in the back, I mean, that's just right there. It's right there. It's so obvious. But whoever disagrees, that's not wrong. I mean, that's like the most wrongest thing I ever, you know, one of the most wrongest things to shoot somebody. I mean, if he was pointing that fake gun at them, okay, well, you know, I get it, you know, but he's running away. That's my stopping point right there. I mean, that's a no-no.
I mean, I saw his face, and he definitely looked like a juvenile. Like, they could not have mistaken him for a 16- or 17-year-old. The fact of the matter is it just seems like they never picked the path of least resistance. They never pick, you know, the kind of stuff that they spray protesters with, like stuff to knock them out, or tasing. They don't pick stuff like that. They always pick the most powerful, easiest way to stop somebody.
Yeah, well, you know, the law is, right, the way a police officer can protect itself, right, is the suspect has shown some kind of, like, a danger to the police officer and the public, you know, they show that they can actually, you know, they're dangerous or whatever. Like, let's just say if you try to run over a police officer, legally they can shoot at you. That's the rules, you know. They use those kind of rules, you know, to shoot at people. But in this way, he was running away, and even if he had a real gun and started shooting at the police officers, I mean, let's just say he dropped the gun and now he's unarmed and he's running away. You don't shoot an unarmed. There should be a law all around this country where no police officer can shoot at a person this unarmed and running away. That should be period. That should be a law right there.
Yeah, I think Columbus is a smaller city than Cleveland. There's three big C's in the Ohio: Cleveland, Cincinnati, and Columbus. And I don't think it is as dangerous of a city. And it just seems like when it comes down to knee-jerk reactions, that a lot of police really don't have a lot of common sense. But the only thing that I think stands out in this case compared to all the other ones we talked about in the past is that, well, for one thing, this kid was a standout football player in the Young Scholar Program. I don't know what he was doing out with a 19-year-old, but the fact that he had a identical-looking BB gun to police guns made it more suspicious, and they responded to a call saying it was an armed robbery. So, once again, it could have been limited information, deceptive perspectives, and things like that. But it does tie into the Edward Snowden case, in which where people, he served 10 years and he created a program while he was a computer engineer and, I mean, contractor. He did create several programs. They took one of his programs without his permission and used it for harmful actions against other non-nationals. And it just goes to show that there was one line in the movie about how the U.S. government, now that they're a unipolar power, their sole intention is to prevent further wars by asserting their power before bigger things happen. And then they also mentioned that China, Russia, and Iran are our real only enemies. Iraq was wasted, and it's never going to rise again. So basically what they were saying is through their surveillance and subversive intelligence, they're going to, and knocking out Chinese people who are trying to hack our systems and other places around the world, that we're basically going to suppress anybody who even tries to come up against us. So maybe that can be translated into national and local police forces.
Well, you know, I mean, Russia has been, kind of an enemy of the United States for quite a long time. But, you know, even though, I mean, right now, I mean, the United States and Russia are collaborating and working together to fight terrorists in Syria, you know. And, you know, that's what they're saying, at least, you know. You know, and
the foreign aid that was supposed to go into Syria today to help the remaining victims did not make it there. And there's a lot of international strife over that right now because those people are on death's door. And Russia supposedly cooperated, but it still didn't happen.
Well, check this out, okay? Because, look, United States right now is really messed up right now in Syria because the backers the United States are supporting, the rebels they're supporting in Syria, some of the rebels on video camera saying that they're going to kill U.S. Marines that are coming over there from Turkey, you know, because also we support Turkey as well, and so you got U.S. Marines over there in Turkey as well, you know. And so the Syrian rebels they're saying that they're going to assassinate any American soldiers that come from Turkey. And that's what they've been saying on video footage. You know, that was caught on video footage. And so we got allies here and there, but then again, like, they're not really allies. Just like we're allies with we're allies with so many, like Saudi Arabia, right? We're allies with Saudi Arabia, but they're enemies with and they don't like Turkey, right? But no, we're allies with Turkey as well, and but that's about it for me. I'm good.
I agree with that, Don. Do you have a comment, or are you whisked away to an important state dinner?
No. I'm finished with all of that. I'm not quite sure where that just all went. We went to Russia, China, Turkey, Saudi Arabia, Iraq. I am kind of lost. But the bottom line is that all those people hate us, so I don't know what we're talking about here that would be beneficial for pretty much anything that we're talking about, including police relations and the situation with anything else that we're talking about. But, you know, I'm not quite sure where we're going with this.
Okay, I have a question for you. Let's say America is hated within and without and past the borders. But some people have the conception that they're still doing good, but many people know of their dual identity, such as doing good in the world versus causing harm. Is the next 10 years, no matter who gets elected, going to be putting fires out around the world just to maintain our prominence and authority?
I've already mentioned this many times, that if you look at the Keynesian economic theories, all right, and this is one of the most prominent economists of our time, we're talking about the fact that there are only two ways to make money, guns and butter, right? And if we don't produce enough agricultural exports or make enough profit with our own internal consumption, there's only one other way that we can make money on a large scale, and that is guns. And that's exactly how we're doing it. We're proposing guns in every household, all the college campuses, anywhere that you can walk that's not a state building is going to be gun-friendly. That is not American, but all these Americans are always saying we're Americans, and they're idiots. They're liars. You know, but the bottom line is that the guns is the way that we can quickly get ourselves into a tax frenzy where we would have an opportunity to have everyone, you know, full employment and some high-paying jobs that would be taxable, where we could avoid a Ferguson, for instance, or St. Louis, which has arrest rate as Ferguson does. But, you know, we're looking at the fact that guns is the only way to go.
Well, I do want to mention one thing, and you're probably going to think it's controversial. The GHOST program I was talking about earlier, which is also called Five Eyes, which is an intelligent alliance between Australia, Canada, New Zealand, the U.S., and the United Kingdom. Edward Snowden revealed that is a supranational organization. In other words, it exceeds national boundaries. It does not answer to the known laws of its countries, which is also includes the Geneva Convention, and it is spying on each other's citizens and collecting information in order to circumvent restrictive domestic regulations on the surveillance of citizens. Now, before you called in, I mentioned the FISA courts, those special secret courts that get permission to do this type of surveillance without public knowledge. They're set up to operate during war times in which our rights become limited. And this ties into what's going on with things like Ferguson, because on a micro level, our police can decide at any time to up its military intuitive and start targeting citizens, and there would really be no paper trail.
Let me tell you something about those, what was it, IIC or something? Or was
the Five Eyes, or F-E-E-Y?
Yeah, I just call them World Police or whatever. World Police or World CIA.
Supranational organizations, yes.
The supranational organization, World Police, whatever. You know, I mean, okay, let's look at businesses that are around the world, right? They have businesses all over the world now. Let's look at Walmart, right? Walmart has more money than the 50 poorest countries together. There's a lot of powerful companies that have more money than many other countries. You know, it's so ridiculous how even so many countries can't even compete with a business. I mean, we're at a point where you know, when in a couple decades, you know, a single or just a bunch of businesses are going to have more money than all the countries put together, you know? And at that point, you're going to be like,
So let's just say Walmart does make billions of dollars. Don't forget they also hire millions of Americans. So
yes,
exactly,
look,
how could someone like Walmart, who probably breaks environmental laws and probably, as we found out, they took peasant policies on their employees which were life insurance policies to become richer.
What
harm can they do?
Here's the problem, okay? Because companies, okay, let's look at the top owner of the company, right? Like let's just say the top owner of Microsoft is Bill Gates, right? So Bill Gates is a big-time billionaire, right? One of the richest men in the world, right? Okay, Bill Gates, right? So let's just say Bill Gates, over a couple of decades, adds up enough money to buy all the countries in the world, right? Literally, he's richer. Let's just say, in 5 decades, he has more money than all the countries put together in the world, right? And so now countries are poor, and let's just say there are people are starving and dying. And now he has the power to say, okay, like I'll give you a couple $1 million so this country will be able to have food, but they're going to have to do this for me and do that for me and do that. And so now, literally, the big time business corporate owners have the power to do anything at that point. You know what I mean? At that point, and they're getting to that point slowly but surely. They're getting there. And then, let me put it in another way. Look at our bank. Okay, our Federal Reserves. Our Federal Reserves and money comes out of nowhere. It's created from nothing. And
Federal Reserve, and it was run by Paul Volcker for years.
Well, look, our Federal Reserve, okay, when America needs money, we get our money from the Federal Reserve, and the Federal Reserve's money's coming from the banks. All right, we are run by banks. Our money is coming from the bank, and the bank creates money out of nothing. And so literally the banks can decide whether how much money is in fluctuation. They can decide if they want a lot of money in fluctuation, a little bit of money in fluctuation. They're the deciders.
Can I just stop you for a second?
Yes, go ahead.
Paul Volcker was the chairman of the Federal Reserve for like 25 years. And he had a lot of control, and then Alan Greenspan was also a dominant force in that. If you watch any of those movies from around the 2008 crash, one of them's over on my shelf. All 12 major banks except for Wells Fargo needed a bailout, and it was all based on people who were top chairmen on the Federal Reserve that were corrupt, like Goldman Sachs. Everybody knows there's mega corruption at the top. The top 1% run it, and it was a disaster. The only thing that it took Obama 3 years just to get his head above water, and now things are running okay, but none of us really know how bad or good it is. Now, I heard recently that they're going to raise the interest rate 0.5% to 1%, and Trump was already going off on a rampage that the new woman chairman doesn't know what she's doing and that she's going to damage the economy. So what's your main point? Because we only have 8 minutes of the show left.
Okay, let me say it real quick, okay? Real quick, Bill Gates may be a billionaire, maybe one of the richest men, right, as we call rich people. But if you look at the banks, which we don't even know who the owners are, who the people in the back are, but their money is in the trillions and the trillions. And so they're the richest people in the world, but we don't even know who they are.
Well, do we need to know unless they're going to kill us?
Well, if you gotta hide from people, that means you must be doing something wrong.
I agree, Now, I want to ask Don and you a question.
I don't. People want to be free and just want to be left alone. That's all. That's what a majority of them are. All these people who are living in trailers out in the middle of nowhere, that's all they're doing. They're not necessarily running away from anything. They're just trying to survive.
If you hide behind money, you must be doing something wrong.
But they're not. I mean, these guys don't have money if you are living in a trailer half the time, and half the people who are living in trailers in the middle of nowhere, they don't have a whole lot of money.
By the way, you guys, we are going to continue this show tomorrow night at 9. For those of you who can't join us, I'm sorry. But up until on Thursday, I'm renewing my Blog Talk Radio Premium. But as of right now, we only have 3 minutes left of this show. So I don't need to do a conclusion. Albert, you can do one. And Don, you can pipe in.
Well, I'll continue on a little bit more about when I said, like, if Bill Gates is the richest man in the world and has more money than all the countries put together, you know, that'll be it. It should be, like, the number one ruler. That's where our country's going right now. I mean, that's where, I mean, the world's going. That means where the world's going, and the people are getting, you know, the billionaires and trillionaires are getting richer and richer, and poor people are getting more poor. The poor countries, they're getting poor. Even United States, you know, the deficit, they just keep on raising the deficit, and, you know, and they owe more money every year. They keep just owe more money, you know, to the banks, you know.
Which
and
makes
so,
us
you know,
beholden to foreign countries, too.
So, okay, but I'm just saying it because, you know, America is, like, you know, rich and powerful. They say, oh, yeah, America is the richest and powerful. Actually, no, America is in a huge debt. And if you look at the debt, they're not rich and powerful. In fact, the people that own America are the rich and powerful people. Okay, the trillionaires, the guys, the big corporate owners, they're the rich ones, and they're the ones that run America. And you know, soon they'll run the world when they have enough money to buy the world. When the world goes broke and people go starving, you know, the list goes on. So that's where we're going, and that's the globalist plan.
My final word is, Don, can you join us tomorrow night?
Yes, I'll be able to. I'll be working till 9, so I probably will be a minute or two late.
A little late.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay,
Albert, I like what you said.
Like John always says, Albert, thank you, Don. Like John always says, follow the money. Now, we can't always follow the invisible rich people, but we know what their intent is, to hoard resources, greed, power, and to screw the little guy. Right now, we can only do what we can to create a justified environment, you know, for this upcoming election, whether it's just convincing one person to go to the polls, or talk to people about third-party candidacy. I have a couple reels on my Facebook page, if anyone's listening. There was a couple third-party candidate debates this month with John Fitzgerald Johnson and a few other people.